Right, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted to do this interview for a while. I want to talk about several things, and I want to speak to Frank Hunt about, first of all, the Cabinet and what he's doing, because I think that the city should be talked about more on this programme. You know I'm a great fan and friend of our Mayor of Liverpool, and I also want to be friends with all the Cabinet. So to explain what it's all about, and then to talk about advice on prescriptions, which is really interesting, we're going to talk to Councillor Frank Hunt, who is Cabinet Member, Social Inclusion, Fairness and Equality Labour Councillor for Chilwell Ward. Frank, first of all, thanks for coming.
Pleasure, Peter.
That's a long title for a card.
It is a long title and it covers many, many things, so I couldn't hope to do all of them.
Right.
but we're trying to make a start on social inclusion and fairness in the city, mainly following on from the work of the Fairness Commission, which was chaired by Claire Dove, who I'm sure you know from Blackburn House. Yeah.
Let's leave that to one side for a minute. Frank, what is it all about the Cabinet? Can you explain and the tears from Joe, the Mayor of Liverpool?
Well, it's a relatively new form of local government. If you think back to the old city councils, if you were chair of social services or chair of education, you had ultimate responsibility for that area of activity. Now we've got an elected mayor. The elected mayor chooses his cabinet, and most of the city council decisions are taken in cabinet. Cabinet meets once a fortnight, 9 o'clock in the town hall. It's a public meeting. Where all our decisions are open to the public. And those decisions are then scrutinised, ratified by the various committees of the council. So, for example, there would be a select committee on education, chaired by a councillor, who would be able to pull in, draw in those decisions made by the mayor and the cabinet. So it is a new way of operating in local government.
Where did the idea come from?
I think originally it was the Labour government, 97 onwards, had this idea of cabinet government for cities, but it has been embraced by the coalition government. There's a mayor of Salford, he operates with a cabinet government. Bristol do the same, but it hasn't really caught on in some other cities.
Do you think taking your councillor head off, and I know you're friends with Joe and I know you're very, very keen on what's going on, but do you think it's a good thing to have a mayor of Liverpool?
I think it's an excellent idea because it enables someone to speak for the whole city. When Joe speaks in London or Manchester, it's recognised that he's not just speaking for the council, because Joe isn't a councillor anymore. As the mayor of the city, he's not a councillor, but he's speaking for the whole city. And by that, I mean not just the council, but the education establishments, the universities, business, the voluntary sector, the third sector, our residents all together as one. And I think you gain some respect by speaking for the city in that way and not just the council. Boris Johnson's probably the best example of someone who's recognised as a spokesperson for a city.
Now, how does that fit in with your job as Chilwell Ward, as Labour councillor? Surely it takes a lot more of your time up.
It does. Being a cabinet member is a great honour. It's a privilege, but it's also a responsibility. Because, as you know, there are three councillors for each ward in the city. And in Chilwell, we've got three councillors, myself and Jeremy Wolfson and Ruth Hirschfield. And we get all the usual issues to deal with in the ward. You know, people's complaints about various things. People want us to represent them on other issues. But separately from that, I have my cabinet responsibilities. So it is, you know, it's onerous, but I volunteered, Peter, so I'm glad to do it.
So you're pleased about it?
Very pleased. Yeah.
How long have you been a politician?
I was elected in May 2014. So prior to that, I had what might be described as a real job. I was the regional secretary of Unison, the trade union. And prior to that, I worked in local government. And when I was a trade union official, I didn't think it was right to be an elected councillor. I thought there would have been a conflict of interest in that. Quite often, as a senior trade union official, I would be negotiating with leaders of local authorities in the northwest. So it wouldn't have been right, I don't think, to have also been an elected councillor. But once I took early retirement, I stood for the council.
Now, it's interesting that because you've gone from unions, so you know you've done some real groundwork on that, so that can be put into the job you've got now. But it's a thankless job, isn't it? It is rewarding for you, maybe, but to the public, it is always negative.
There's a lot of negativity around councils, and I think that's probably because we have to take some hard decisions. If you think about the library closures that are going through at the moment, that is, no Labour councillor, I would suggest no city councillor, would want to close a library. But the difficult financial circumstances we're living in at the moment lead us to make hard choices. And in making hard choices, we're bound to upset people.
You bang your head against the wall now when you think of the unbelievably evil cuts. They're not bad. They're evil to you, the police, to the fire brigade, to the fire service, I should say. I can't imagine the depression you must take home because something has to be cut.
Particularly at a time, Peter, when we're trying to regenerate the city, we're trying to re-energise the city. And I think Joe and the council have made great strides in that direction. You know, if you look along the waterfront, if you look around the city centre, this looks to a visitor like a city on the up. I genuinely believe it is a city on the up. But we do have major problems. If you put your back to the river and face in any direction, you know, through Kirkdale, through Picton, through Kensington, through Wavertree, you will find areas of deprivation. And that is a challenge to us as councillors, because it's not just about regenerating the city centre and making an attractive place for visitors to come. We need to make this an attractive city for the people who live here, for our citizens.
I agree with what you say, but you know yourself, the heart has to be set up. Then all the channels, the veins, can then be worked on. And I think we've done an incredible job of the city. When you think from 2008, the Duke of Westminster spending so much money rebuilding it, I think you're doing a fabulous job. But it's still a thankless job because people only see the negative side. And there's a lot of people out there selling Liverpool to the world.
Yeah, and when you think, you know, beyond the city centre, Joe made a number of pledges when he was elected mayor, which it's hard to believe it's over 2 years ago now. And a couple of them. We said we'd build 5,000 new homes. To date, we've built 4,500 new homes. We said we'd build 12 new schools. And you've probably seen some of the great new schools we've built, Archbishop Beck, some of the primary schools. We're on target to build those 12 new schools. So we are investing in our communities as well as investing in regenerating the city. And it may seem strange for a Labour councillor or a socialist, and I'm proud to say I'm a socialist, to say, but we want to be business friendly. We want businesses to come into this city. We live in a market economy. We know the only way to re-energise the city is to attract business, to employ our citizens.
As an ex-union leader, how has that fitted into the job that you're doing now?
I think it's been useful because as a trade union leader, when I was regional secretary of Unison, in this region we had 200,000 members. 70% of them were women. I take no pride in the fact, but many of them were low-paid women. And we represented people who mainly worked for the public sector. And there's a stereotypical view of trade union officials that, you know, we're always on the picket line, we're always arguing, we're always banging the table. That's not reality. Our job as trade union officials was to do deals, was to negotiate, was to make things happen, was to ease the way forward. And I think in the private sector, trade unions have done a great job in helping businesses be friendly to the city. I mean, if you think of Germany, there's a much closer relationship in Germany between the representatives of workers and the private companies. They're on the boards of private companies. They recognise that a happy workforce, a workforce that feels respected, is going to be a better workforce.
With this cabinet set up and with a mayor, how easy is it for the public to get to know about things?
I would encourage every citizen of this city, every member of Liverpool, our Liverpool family, to take an interest in the city. As I said earlier, cabinet meetings are open to the public. Every other Friday at 9 o'clock, we have cabinets, and you can come and see those decisions being taken. It moves pretty fast, obviously, because we've had the papers beforehand, the groundwork's been done, but you can witness decision making in action. You can go to your councillor's surgeries. All councillors have an email address. We all have a phone number you can contact us on. Engage with us.
Now, let's break down your membership on cabinet. What are you? What is your job title?
It's the title, as you said earlier, is quite a long title. It's about social inclusion, fairness and equalities. And the main emphasis since I've been doing it in May has been around social inclusion. And you know from your phone in, from living in the city, that many people in Liverpool have been affected by the changes to the benefits system. The obvious one, the bedroom tax. 11,500 of our households were affected by the bedroom
tax. Let me stop you there and just ask you a question. A couple of newspapers recently have said that the government in now actually say they want to get rid of the bedroom tax, but in fact they don't, that they're wasting time in Parliament. Do you know anything about that?
The current government will not get rid of the bedroom tax. There is a pledge that a Labour government, should it come in May 2015, will get rid of the bedroom tax. But in many ways, Peter, the damage has been done.
Yeah.
Because we know many, many people in this city, some of whom weren't directly affected by the bedroom tax, were frightened by it, were concerned by it, and moved out of their homes and moved to smaller properties because of the threat of the bedroom tax. You know, homes they'd lived in, brought their family up in for 25, 30, 40 years.
It didn't make any sense at all. It's the one thing that I've been totally and utterly against, like everybody else. But you say the damage is already done.
In many ways it has been, but if it could be abolished, that would be one step forward. The other things that are happening on the welfare front is we've had a benefit cap, which means that no one can receive more than a certain amount of benefits. That affected a number of families in this city. And now we've got the dreaded universal credit rolling out, which will be the replacement for six individual benefits. Now, you know, people might say, and I when it was first announced some years ago, this is a good thing. It'll simplify the benefits system. It'll make life easier for those applying for benefits, and it'll make it easy to administer. The real story is it's about reducing the benefit bill.
But in the real world, would it, if it wasn't reducing it, would it be the sensible thing to do?
If it was about simplifying the system and it was operated fairly, yes. Because our benefit system is very similar to our tax system. Overly complicated, difficult to understand, unless you can afford to employ an accountant to sort it out for you. A simplification would be a great idea. But there's been a House of Commons select committee made up of members of Parliament from all parties that have looked at the changes to the benefit system and suggested that the Department of Works and Pensions has lost its way. Instead of concentrating on finding people work and being what we used to call, you know, a job centre, which looked for work for people, it's concentrating on policing the benefit system. And I know you've had lots of calls about the sanctions, the benefit sanctions system, which seems to be operating very unfairly.
Putting your other hat on, do you think, without going into it too much, that we are paying too much in benefits to some people?
I think it's a mixed bag. I would be foolish to sit here and say there isn't abuse of the benefit system. Of course there's abuse of the benefit system, but it's a tiny, tiny proportion. And in this city, we've got a team in the city council that works with people, works with the Citizens Advice Bureau to ensure that some of our, particularly our older citizens, are getting the benefits they're entitled to. Because many of our citizens do not get the benefits they're entitled to.
That's interesting you say that, because over the years, it's never talked about. But in fact, there are millions owed, to so many people.
Absolutely.
That don't. And the older people are too proud to claim.
Yeah, and this is what we come up against in our dealings with poverty in the city. There's a great pride in this city. And you'll hear people talking about poverty, and they won't be talking about themselves. They'll say, my sister, my mum, my daughter is having a really difficult time. Because to even accept, to voice the fact that you're in poverty is really difficult for proud working class people. And that's a shame, because sometimes people don't recognise they're in a situation where we as the city could help them, or the benefit system could help them. You know, they're but for the grace of God.
Yeah.
We're only all a month's payday away from penury in some ways, aren't we?
Yeah. So we've got the bedroom tax, we've got the benefit system. What else do you do? If that's not enough.
Yeah, that is an ongoing relationship we're developing with the Departments of Works and Pensions. And I don't meet the people in the job centres. I meet the managers, if you like, who are trying to deliver the strategy of universal credit and the benefit system. And one of the things I've said to them, for example, is roughly 50% of those people who appeal their benefits sanction win. So, in effect, that benefit was sanctioned incorrectly. So we've said to the DWP, are you learning from that? Are you actually looking at why you are losing appeals, which take time, which cost money? Why, you know, wouldn't you think there's some lessons to be learned there and perhaps sanction less people? Anyway, you asked me what the other things we do. Part of my role for Joe is to liaise with all those agencies who are working to help our citizens our vulnerable citizens. So that is Citizens Advice Bureau, the faith groups who do a fantastic job in this city. And that's been a learning curve for me. You know, I'm coming into contact with the faith groups and the great work that's done on things like the food banks, Together Liverpool, the Church of England team that works in the city. Also the credit unions, all those organisations that are willing to work with the council to help our most vulnerable. I try to liaise with them and work with them. So we have what's called a poverty action group. We meet about once every 5 or 6 weeks. We share experiences and we see if there's anything we can do, any pressure we can bring to bear.
Right. Tell me about the prescriptions.
Right. This is a great scheme and it's fairly unique. Again, Liverpool leading the way. And it's called Advice on Prescriptions. And basically what it means is all of our GPs are linked into this scheme. I think there's 90 plus GP practices in Liverpool. They're all linked into this scheme. Someone might present, an individual patient might present to a GP, and traditionally they might be depressed, they might be under stress, and a more traditional response would have been to prescribe drugs. What the GPs can do now under this scheme is prescribe advice. So they could say to you, Peter, I don't think drugs are the answer to your problem. So I'm going to prescribe you 2 sessions at the Citizens Advice Bureau to talk through your problems or the credit union, whatever, to give you some advice. Now, that might help you through. It might mean you don't need any drugs. It might get you through the situation you're in now.
Well, straight away, what jumps to me is common sense.
Yeah. You'd think, why hasn't it been done before?
It's something I would never have thought about in a million years.
And the GPs have embraced it. It's been in operation since April this year. Already, they've, back to the other point we were talking about, they've managed to get £250,000 in unclaimed benefits for people who are in dire straits, people who hadn't claimed before.
Let me stop you there. You know that unclaimed, is there a pot somewhere with money in? Or have they got to pluck that out of nowhere?
No, there's no pot. Right. It's within the total budget. Right. But once the claim's processed, they have no choice but to pay it, because it is an unclaimed benefit. They've also reduced debt levels to the tune of nearly £1 million, you know, helped people through debt. Because you know from your calls, some of the people who are in debt stop opening envelopes. They don't want to know about it. They turn their face away from it. And sometimes all it needs is to sit down with someone in Citizens Advice, get it all on the table, go through it and make an arrangement with whoever you're in debt to. And that can be resolved. The worry's off your head. You might only be paying £5 a week back, but you're in the clear. The letters stop coming, the pressure stops. And, you know, we find that it's a great cause of mental health problems in this city, that big problem in the city.
Now, this idea, where do you start? You go to a GP?
You just present to your GP, and every GP practice in this city is signed up to the scheme. Now, it may be that, you know, a normal prescription is most appropriate for you, but if the GP thinks there's a chance that you can be helped through this system, he will refer you. And it's being managed by the Citizens Advice Bureau, who, I have to say, the Citizens Advice Bureau in this city is one of the best organisations I've ever come across.
They've been on my show many times. I just can't believe how caring, how far they go with the problem. And I send everybody to the Citizens Advice because they're just remarkable people.
And they've faced what we call a perfect storm in the last year. You know, as the number of people coming through their doors has increased, their funding's been reduced. So, you know, a time when they could do with more people working in CABs, and a lot of them are volunteers, don't forget, they just haven't got the cash, you know, and they're really under pressure.
So this is in ongoing right now, it started?
Started in April. I think it's a 2-year pilot. We'll see how it goes. But the CCG, the Clinical Commissioning Group, which is the umbrella organisation for all our GPs, are very pleased with it, very keen with it, keen on it.
Now, what about the times with a GP? Because isn't that a problem?
Yeah, I mean, that is a separate and difficult problem at the moment. And it's a national problem in that, you know, you'll quite often hear people complaining about how long it takes to get an appointment with a GP. And I mean, this scheme doesn't really address that, but it at least, it gives the GP another option. And I think that's well worth pursuing. So, you know, I would encourage people to use the scheme. And again, it's Liverpool in the forefront.
Is there a title for the scheme?
It's called Advice on Prescription.
Right. So you just go to your doctor and say, right, I'm not very well, I've got a problem, but I'd like advice first.
Yeah.
And he will then say, well, let's see what the options are.
You're depressed. It's a direct route for
the tablet's doctor. Tablet's not going to help. You need actually to talk to somebody. Or your health isn't too good, you need to go to a gym. Or it's going in different directions,
yeah,
which he is the expert on, yeah, and can help. But all being it's not needed, he'll give you a prescription.
Yeah, he's the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think in many ways it'll take pressure off GPs. It gives GPs another outlet.
Mm-hmm.
Because the last thing they want to do, I would imagine, is just prescribe drugs.
Yeah. Plus, it's also, in a way, saving money as well.
It's a win-win, really,
yeah,
isn't it? If it,
yeah,
saves money off the drugs bill, it gets people a solution, it gets them out of a hole, and it makes the doctor, the GP, feel better about it. You know, how can we lose with this?
Frank, it's been really interesting talking to you because I want to get every one, if I can, of the cabinet members on and to regularly talk to them and for you to ring up and say, can I talk to your listeners? Because I want to tell them about this. I want to tell them about that. And I think it's a great vehicle because it is a village. It's not a city.
Yeah.
Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
The budgets, before you go, I've got to ask. It really is scary, isn't it? You're all clever people. You've all done your homework. But it really must be very worrying. You must shake your head in disbelief.
We do, and it's almost like a mantra, you know. At most meetings, we have to refer to the budgets when people say, why are we doing this or why are we doing that? But we will persistently keep saying it. And we have been affected more than any other city in the country. Of the 11 core cities, we have been the worst affected.
Can you explain why that is?
As a politician, I would say it's political. I would say there's no votes for a coalition government in this part of the country, so why would they bother, you know, looking to help us? You can almost draw no other conclusion because this is clearly a city that needs those grants, that needs that kind of help. So why wouldn't they provide it? But they don't, and those cuts have been severe. You know, it's in the millions, Peter. I can say, you know, we're talking millions. And in Liverpool, you know, even out the welfare reforms, we're the fourth biggest loser of 379 local authorities. The fourth biggest loser out of almost 380 local authorities. But we're going to work with it. We'll continue to work with it. And Joe says many times, you know, we got challenged on it. Joe has said many times, when he stood to be mayor of this city, he said he would not set an illegal budget. He will try and operate within the parameters given to us and do his best for the city. And that's what we're trying to do.
But if he'd have set an illegal budget, we won't even go down this road. The can of worms has been opened for them to do anything they want to us. Simple as that. Let's just leave that at that, because that really makes me cross. Have I missed something on national news? I don't see the name Liverpool when they're talking about rail. This male HR, whatever,
yeah,
damn thing. Have I missed something?
No, you haven't. And that's another thing. You know, what we're saying now is there's one north, not two norths. And that one north includes Liverpool. The North isn't just about Manchester, Leeds and Hull. It's about Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds and Hull. And as a North, we need to make those points to people. Need to make it clear that we have been disadvantaged compared to the South. There is a North-South divide. Let's get real about this. I think if you go to London, the amount of money being invested in Crossrail to get people across London, probably 10 times the amount invested in cities like Liverpool. And yes, the capital city does need investment. We want there to be a good transport system in Liverpool, but we want one up here. And if we're going to grow, we need it.
Two questions left. Have you got an opinion on bus lanes?
On the bus lanes, I waited to see the report. And believe me, it was a big report. It was 600
words.
Pages.
600 words. Pages. That would be easy as, yeah, 600 words.
But the general conclusion was, in the main, they added nothing. They helped in no way to journey times in the city, except for four. And we're going to retain four in the city. But what we've also said is, we're going to look at the possibility of red routes, you know, which are direct,
yeah,
routes into the city.
And nobody can park
nobody
on
can
that.
Park.
Not at all.
We'll review the whole situation. You know, we're not closing our minds to what's going to happen in the future. But it was about taking decisions based on information. And that report is very detailed. Again, I would urge people to contact us on it. I had one submission as a Chilwell councillor on it from a guy who was very knowledgeable about transport. I responded to him and said I'd read the report and I would be voting for the finishing up of the bus lanes. And we had quite a reasonable conversation about it. There are strong views about bus lanes.
Oh, absolutely. I personally think we don't need bus lanes, but I've always made that clear. I sit up here and I look at sometimes, and sometimes there's problems, but most of the time there doesn't appear to be problems, but, you know, that's up for debate. To finish off, what's your message to everybody? The job you're doing, all of you, with the cuts, the vile cuts, what's your message to people?
Keep the faith. You've got a Labour councillor in Liverpool. You've got a mayor who cares about the city. Every one of us on that cabinet cares about this city and every aspect of the city. I was born and bred in the city. I've lived in the city all my life, although I've worked in other places. My family live here, my kids, my grandkids. We care about this city, so trust us. We'll take our decisions when we have to, but we believe in this city.
Labour councillor for Chilwell Ward, Frank Hunt, thank you very much for joining me.